From the intersection of religion, government, and politics, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy. This week we're broadcasting from the air-conditioned, thank goodness, Argo Studios in New York City. This program is made possible in part through the generous support of State of Belief listeners. For more information on how you can help keep this show on the air, please visit stateofbelief.com. Now, here's what's coming up on this week's show.
Two huge marriage rulings at the Supreme Court.
I think it was a victory for American democracy.
Today's decisions are offensive on so many levels.
We're not dealing with religious belief in all these questions. We're dealing with what the state or the government does.
A holy quintet who goes against the laws of nature and nature's God.
Every American will come to celebrate this decision.
On Wednesday, the U.S. Supreme Court announced landmark rulings on marriage equality that was immediately followed by a flurry of negative responses from the right and, sadly, primarily the religious right. The court is not undoing anything godly, nor can it. But it is also way past time to end a situation where a segment of our population has its basic civil rights restricted in the name, at least in part, of somebody else's religious convictions. Religious liberty is a river that runs both ways. So when the Family Research Council, the Catholic bishops, Southern Baptist, and other groups denounce marriage equality in terms of faith, they are violating the very principle they're claiming to defend. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that's the promise of this country, not life, liberty, and the pursuit of holiness. But that's not stopping some of these groups from loudly promising and organizing to defy the court's rulings. On this week's show, we'll discuss what that might look like with Kevin Ekstrom of Religion News Service. We're also going to talk about the immediate real-life ramifications of the Supreme Court's actions with Leslie Gable Brett of Lambda Legal. But first, we have the honor of getting a reaction to the DOMA and Prop 8 rulings from not one but two legendary civil rights activists who both happen to be retired but very busy Episcopal bishops. I'm very pleased to welcome back to State of Belief Radio the Right Reverend Gene Robinson, the retired bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of New Hampshire, and the one man who, from the day the Supreme Court agreed to hear these cases, we knew we absolutely had to have on the show to react to whatever the outcome would be. Gene, thanks for being with us again on State of Belief.
It's a happy day to be here. Thank you so much.
You know the question coming. What was your reaction to the DOMA and Prop 8 rulings?
I continue to be amazed at how significant it is for me and other LGBT people to have the affirmation of the state. You work for it for 20 or 30 years, but when it comes, it is still an astounding thing.
Mm-hmm.
To have the society of which you are part finally say, you're welcome to be here. And in fact, you deserve what everyone else has been enjoying for generations. It's just a wonderful thing, and my heart has been full ever since.
Who's the first person you called?
Well, now, who do you think? I called my husband. Yeah, we've been together for 25 years and married since January 1st of 2010.
When you were leading the fight for inclusivity at great personal and professional risk, did you honestly think this day would come in our lifetime?
As I was growing up, nothing like this remotely occurred to me. I mean, it was so far out of the realm of possibility that you didn't even imagine it. But in the last 10 years, I have been incredibly hopeful. I mean, I'm always hopeful, right? I mean, that's what Christians are.
Yeah.
But in the last 10 years, seeing this momentum forward has just been thrilling. And I hoped that we would see it. I'm still hoping that I will see marriage equality across the nation before I leave this good earth and go home to God.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up the momentum, because I've been hearing a lot of commentators say that they're just amazed at how quickly the tide turned on LGBT issues in general and on marriage in particular. My hunch is it doesn't feel like it's been all that quick for you, does it?
Well, you know, some of us have been working on this for a long time. But I must say that the last decade to the two or three decades before that has seemed really remarkable.
Yeah.
I don't think ever in the history of the movement has there been so much movement forward in such a short period of time. And, you know, I think the reason we are where we are in this last 10 years and making this kind of progress is that 10 years ago, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, people would have told you they didn't know anyone gay. And now, is there a family left in America that doesn't know some family member, some former classmate, some coworker to be gay or lesbian, bisexual, or transgender? And yeah, that has made all the difference, because when people know us, when this issue comes up, a face comes up with it,
mm-hmm.
and often a relationship that they know about comes up.
Yeah.
Just simply not willing to believe the things they've been told historically about us, and they're no longer willing to treat us unfairly. Every American knows what fair is, and this just stinks of unfairness, and so the tide has changed.
Are you concerned at all, Gene, about the backlash in the short term?
No. Let me tell you why. You get a 51% vote, you've got 49% who didn't agree with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it takes time for that to normalize and for people to adjust. You know, one of the things that we found in New Hampshire is we got civil unions in 2008. And when we were pushing then for marriage equality, we were able to say to the legislature, you remember all of those draconian things that were going to happen if we got civil unions, you know, mm-hmm. like the end of Western civilization as we know it? Anybody see any of that happening? And, of course, even those opposed had to say, no, not really.
Uh-huh.
And that's how quickly things normalize. When people see that their marriages aren't affected by this, their church, their synagogue, their mosque, does not have to bless these unions, this will become old news and really kind of boring, which would be a wonderful place to be.
You know, I've heard you say several times in the past, speaking of the Episcopal Church, this is the church that is risking its life for people like me. Does this validate the risks of the Episcopal Church, and will it help move opposing factions within religious institutions toward reconciliation?
You know, we have been accused of following the culture rather mm-hmm. than being a gadfly to the culture. And what I say in response to that is, you know, what if God is working in the culture? I mean, it seems to me that God is going to do God's will and God's justice work with or without the church.
Mm-hmm.
And if God is working in the culture, and then a denomination recognizes God in that work and joins God there, that's a good thing. Not only is it not something to be ashamed of, it is something to be proud of. And I think more and more people will face into the question we've really been asking, which is, could the church have gotten this wrong all these years? The way we got it wrong for countless generations using Scripture to justify the denigration and subjugation of women.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the answer to that is yes, and that's really what churches and people of faith are struggling with now. Could this be one of those moments in which the Holy Spirit is leading us into this truth that's always been there, but we've not been able to perceive it?
J.B. Phillips, an English scholar, had written a book a long time ago called Your God is Too Small.
I've got it on my bookshelf. I love that book,
yeah.
And the title says it all about the little boxes that we put God in,
yeah,
that God refuses to stay in.
Yeah, I mean, God refuses to stay in just the church. And when you talk about the Spirit moving in social progress, that's not heresy. That's a broad view of God that we see revealed in Scripture.
In John's Gospel, where the night before he dies for us, Jesus says to his disciples, there is much that I would teach you, but you cannot bear it right now.
Mm-hmm.
So I will send the Holy Spirit, who will lead you into all truth. And, you know, I think he was saying, look, for a bunch of uneducated, rough fishermen, you haven't done too badly. But don't think for a minute that God is done with you or that God will be done with those who follow you, because the Holy Spirit has still got more to teach you that you simply can't bear right now. And so I will send the Holy Spirit to lead you into all truth. And I think this is one of those moments.
The Right Reverend Gene Robinson is the retired bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of New Hampshire, the first openly gay bishop in his denomination. Gene has helped pave the way for much of the forward progress we've seen in recent decades. Gene, I thank you for taking time to be with us again on State of Belief Radio.
It has been my pleasure, as it always is with you, Weldon, and let's rejoice together in this.
Coming up, Leslie Gable Brett of Lambda Legal will be with us to discuss the practical, very real-life changes the Supreme Court's rulings will bring. We'll also hear from the Right Reverend Bishop John Shelby Spong. Even before the High Court handed down its decisions on DOMA and California's Proposition 8, leading religious and quasi-religious groups on the right overtly declared their intention to defy any ruling they found unacceptable. Here with analysis of what that might mean in practical terms is Kevin Ekstrom, editor-in-chief of Religion News Service at religionnews.com. Kevin, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thanks for having me.
You've gotten the press releases. Is there anything here that needs to be taken seriously?
Well, I think you could make the argument that their concerns and their beliefs need to be taken seriously. I think probably what is a little less real are some of the threats and doomsday scenarios that many of them are painting. I think a lot of it really centers around red herrings, things that will never happen.
They're saying they won't do the things that, in fact, the court's rulings in no way require them to do anyway?
The big scare here is that churches especially are going to be forced to swallow gay marriage in some form, and that is, on its face, untrue, and it's not going to happen. President Obama himself, no matter what they feel about him, but he laid it out fairly clearly that nothing in the Supreme Court decision makes any impact on what churches choose to do in terms of allowing people to get married or solemnizing marriages. That does not change. That will not change. In fact, there's really no way that the government could do that. So the idea that, you know, pastors are going to be forced to marry gay couples is factually untrue. I think we will see, because we already have seen it to some extent, private sector battles over this. So, for example, a conservative Christian who owns a bakery or a floral shop, you know, will they be forced to provide cakes or flowers for a gay wedding? It oftentimes depends on the state law and what the discrimination code spells out, and different states have different laws on that. There will be complaints about that. And the question, I think, going forward is how aggressively the gay rights side pushes that. Some people want to make a big deal out of these sorts of cases, and they want to take them to court and, you know, make banner headlines out of it. Others are, I think, a little bit more pragmatic and think that that's not the right fight to pick. So, yes, there will be conflicts, but I think it's fair to say that they won't be on the level that some of the activist groups are worried about.
Yeah. It's a great fundraising campaign.
That's right. You know, the government can no more compel a Catholic priest to marry a gay couple than it can compel a Catholic priest to marry a divorced couple. Those rules are and always will be up to the churches or the mosques or the synagogues or temples or whatever. That is not going to happen. What you're going to see is similar to the fights that we have seen over the contraception mandate, you know, whether or not companies are required to provide contraception insurance coverage to their employees. And we've had a number of Christian-owned businesses balk at that, say, we're not going to do it. And I think you'll have something like that, perhaps, over the gay marriage question, but not necessarily, because not all gay groups are going to push this.
Right. Right. Would you advise pushing it?
I would not. And I think what they need to do is know how to take a yes. This was a huge victory, and they know that. And the question is, can they be winners, or do they have to be sore winners and try to sort of rub it into the other side's face? Right. If they're smart about it, what they will do is they'll say, okay, we got a major Supreme Court victory. That's great. Let's let people get used to this. Try to get it into other states, New Jersey and New Mexico and some other places. Mm-hmm. We'll fight on the state level, but we won't push people into a corner where they're going to really object to this idea. So slow, measured progress, I think, is what they should go for. Whether or not they do, is another question.
Right. Do you think it will influence voters, especially self-identified conservative Christian voters, in the next election?
Honestly, the next national election is more than a year away. That is more than enough time for this issue to settle down. Now, it's entirely possible that there could be a state or two that tries to do a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage between now and then. I think Indiana is one of the possibilities. And so it's possible that that could be used as a rallying cry for conservatives the next time around. But I don't think that this issue has the same sort of resonance that it did, say, back in 2004 when President Bush used it to get people to the polls.
Right.
The poll numbers are remarkably different now than they were then. I don't think that this is a motivating issue like it was. And actually, if you look at the last election in 2012, it actually had the opposite effect, where you had three states actually approve gay marriage at the ballot box. Mm-hmm. So I don't predict that this is going to be a get people to the polls issue like it once was. Probably I would be surprised if it ever could be again.
Yeah. Kevin Ekstrom is editor-in-chief of Religion News Service, which we rely on every day for outstanding secular coverage of religious news in our country and our world, religionnews.com. Kevin, as always, I thank you for providing your perspective on this major story here on State of Belief Radio. It's always great to have you on.
Happy to do it.
Still to come on this week's show, reaction from pioneering civil rights activist Bishop John Shelby Spong to the Supreme Court's marriage decisions. While many of us have waited years and even decades for the decisions handed down this week by the Supreme Court, in some ways, it still feels like things have changed in the blink of an eye. What does the fall of DOMA, the Ill-Conceived Defense of Marriage Act, mean to same-gender couples? Here with a legal perspective is Leslie Gable Brett, Director of Education and Public Affairs at Lambda Legal, a national organization working for the civil rights of LGBT persons. Dr. Gable Brett, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Congratulations first on a double victory.
It's a congratulations to all of us in the whole community and in the country for, I think, a stunning step forward for equality and fairness. We're 40 years old here at this organization, been working at this a long time, and I'm very proud to be part of it.
Well, you should be. I'd like for you, if you would, to comment briefly about how you see this ruling came about. A lot of LGBT groups, as you know, were very nervous about having these cases come before the Supreme Court at this particular time. It looks like a very conservative court. What happened?
Well, so many things have happened since all of these cases were first filed, and the country has moved giant steps forward because of the work of all the national organizations. Lambda Legal is one, but there are many others, and all the local organizations and LGBT people and our allies all across the country. We have moved public opinion. We've won at the ballot in four states in the last election. We've won in the courts, and we have, you know, before California is coming online, we have 12 12 states where marriage equality is the law of those states. And so we've moved the whole country forward to the place where these decisions are in some ways following public opinion and in other ways, of course, moving us forward, because there are still many places in the country where we have big fights ahead of us and a lot more to do to secure equality for LGBT people.
Sure.
But the country's changing, and it's changing quickly, and it's changing quickly because of the work and the courage of all the folks who are pushing.
Dr. Gable Brett, were you surprised on Wednesday?
I wasn't surprised. I had a lot of confidence in the legal arguments and the legal work in both of these cases. And as you said, there's really two cases that were very different in what they achieved and what they argued. On the one hand, we struck down the terrible Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA, and on the other hand, we affirmed decisions that had previously ruled Prop 8 unconstitutional, therefore opening the door for the freedom to marry to come back to California.
Mm-hmm.
So we were hoping for both of those. We never want to get ahead of the Supreme Court, so of course we were waiting with bated breath. We were all sitting in front of our computer screens yesterday morning waiting for the results. But I wasn't surprised, because I think these were the right results, and the legal work that led up to them certainly prepared the court to reach these conclusions.
You know, my guess is that there are some same-gender couples and LGBT individuals who, even at this moment, though celebrating, don't understand how significantly their lives changed on Wednesday. And I'd like for you to talk about that, if you will.
Well, I'm happy to, because it's huge, and it's so thrilling for a person such as myself who has been working on this movement for quite some time, and for people all across the country who didn't think we would get to this moment. So in particular, by striking down the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, a couple things happened. First of all, it was an enormous statement for our country, because DOMA required the federal government to disregard and disrespect the legal marriages of same-sex couples. It required the federal government to officially discriminate against us. And what the Supreme Court said yesterday is, you can't do that. You can't have the federal government directed by law to discriminate against a group of people who are lawfully married. And it's an enormous statement and change of course for this country, and it feels very powerful to me and to all the folks who are in the LGBT community, and especially those of us who are in marriages.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's a symbolic thing. Then it has a lot of very concrete effects, which you began to make reference to in your introduction. For example, there are over 1,000 federal programs, some of them benefits, some of them laws, some of them obligations, which accrue to people when they get married, and we have been barred from them. So now we will be eligible for them just as other married couples are, and they include things like Social Security benefits, veterans benefits for a spouse, Family and Medical Leave Act for a spouse, certain tax rules, some of which will be in a benefit to married couples, and in some cases will cost them more money, but at least we'll treat them equally.
Mm-hmm.
Certain kinds of benefits at work as a public employee, a whole range of protections, laws, and obligations, and also a very key one that's in the news right now, which is some changes in immigration status, which is to say that married couples in binational relationships where one a member of the couple is a U.S. citizen and wants to sponsor his or her spouse who may not be a U.S. citizen will now have the opportunity to apply just as other couples have been able to do.
Yeah.
That's huge.
It sure is. Leslie, are there some areas where the decisions are simply not yet clear, where things could get complicated as changes to federal law are implemented?
Yes, there are some areas that we still have to clarify and may have to advocate for, because federal laws apply differently in terms of their definitions of when you're married. If you live in a state where there is no recognition of marriages of same-sex couples, so There's a rule that we call the place of celebration rule, which is that the federal government should consider a couple married if they were legally married in the place where their marriage was celebrated. That is, if you got married in a marriage equality state, you're married. But there are some federal programs that rely on a place of residence rule, which means that the federal government considers you married if the state where you live considers you married. So we will be working with the Obama administration and, if necessary in the future, with Congress to have as broad and consistent a definition of federal recognition of our marriages as possible, because it's really unfair and confusing and may have terrible consequences in some cases. If you get married and you live in one state and then later in your life you move, you're transferred, you retire and you move to another state, and many of the protections and programs that you relied on, if the rule were not consistent, might disappear. That's not a good outcome.
Sure.
But what we do want to tell couples right now is that you should do a little research and see what's what. We have put up a series of fact sheets that 11 LGBT groups, including Lambda Legal, worked on together, covering 14 different types of federal benefits. So there's an awful lot of information on our website. And immigration, taxes, Social Security, and military benefits, and so on. So please come check it out if you have particular questions that might apply to your own situation.
If you will, please, for people trying to ensure their rights, tell us what your website is so people can go to it.
You bet. It's a pretty easy URL. It's www.lambdalegal.org. But I will say Lambda is spelled with a B in the middle. It's the Greek word Lambda. So that's LAMBDALegal.org, all one word. And if you put us in a search box at Google or something as Lambda Legal, you'll find us.
Right.
And the link to those fact sheets will be on our homepage. So please feel free to come visit those fact sheets or call our help desk. The number for the help desk is also on our website.
I have one more question, and I don't think it's cynicism. I think it's being realistic. But is there a way for opponents of marriage equality to create obstacles to the full implementation of the Supreme Court's decisions in courtrooms across the country?
Well, I don't want to be too pessimistic about the future, because I think there's a high likelihood that things will go forward as we hope and expect. But in California, there may be some challenges at the local level about whether the trial court decision in the Proposition 8 case applies across the state. We already have both the governor and the attorney general there saying very clearly and assertively that the freedom to marry will be restored in California. So we're feeling pretty confident and optimistic that that will go forward. But there may be some people who try to block, and we'll go to court to do so, and we'll fight back. And I'm pretty confident we'll win.
Mm-hmm.
And then as to the application of the decision in the DOMA case, I really don't think there's much left to stall that in the big picture, but there are these technicalities to work out about how things apply, particularly in the many states across the country where marriages of same-sex couples are not yet legal or recognized. So we'll be working on that, and Lambda Legal and other sister organizations will be keeping the community informed as we go along.
Dr. Leslie Gable-Brett is Director of Education and Public Affairs at Lambda Legal. There are in-depth resources for couples, as she said. Couples affected by the Supreme Court's decisions, go to lambdalegal.org. Dr. Gable-Brett, I have to tell you, you did exactly what we wanted you to do and expected you to do, and it was helpful, and we thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
It's my pleasure, Reverend Gaddy. Thanks for calling, and congratulations to all of us.
On Wednesday morning, just as the Supreme Court was poised to announce its momentous rulings on the Defense of Marriage Act in California's Proposition 8, Ray, my producer, and I were wending our way through the New Jersey countryside on our way to a long-scheduled interview with legendary civil rights activist, the Right Reverend John Shelby Spong, retired Episcopal Bishop of Newark. You'll hear the fascinating conversation that we recorded at Bishop Spong's home on a future show. The interview ranged from his lifetime of ministry and activism to his most recent book, which, by the way, I highly recommend, the fourth gospel, Tales of a Jewish Mystic. But I also took the opportunity to ask Bishop Spong, who during his long career moved from ancestral racism and homophobia to an inclusive vision of the sacredness of all of God's children, for his reaction to the breaking news out of the Supreme Court and his thoughts on what the future might bring.
Well, I think that what has happened is there's been a consciousness rising in this country for about a generation, maybe two generations, and it's finally achieved the majority. And the court, give it credit, it's a pretty conservative court, but the court seems to me to be able to read the signs of the times. And when you get a situation where to try to repress the rising consciousness creates more disorder than to affirm the rising consciousness. And I think that's the judgment they've made. And the court, on one of the rulings was 5-4, which means it's a pretty divided court. The other rulings probably 5-4 too. They do a lot of 5-4 rulings, but I don't know that at this point. That means that the consciousness has now overcome the majority. That doesn't mean that everybody's going to agree with it. So there'll be, but you know, we had a 9-0. Ruling from the court on the desegregation, Brown versus Board of Education. That's because the Supreme Court Chief Justice was Earl Warren, and he thought that was such a major shift in the consciousness that he just really lobbied the other judges to make it unanimous, and he brought it about, which makes this really hard to argue. If it's a 5-4 decision, people will say, well, the next election will get a person in who will pack the court. Somebody's more like Weeble. But I don't believe that's possible. Because I don't think you can win an election today mouthing the sort of homophobia that we used to mouth politically. Yeah. That day is gone. You don't resist consciousness, nor do you turn it around. You know, nobody would contemplate resegregating. No one would contemplate taking the vote away from women. Yeah. Nobody would contemplate forcing gay and lesbian people to go back into the closet today. That we just passed that, and consciousness doesn't go in a two-way street. It's always a one-way direction. You're always more open to the future. So I rejoice in it, and I rejoice in those churches that put their lives on the line when the issue wasn't clear, and made their witness, and I can think of heroes that in every denomination that have done this, and they are to be rewarded today. Yeah. I don't mean somebody's going to reward them, but they'll be rewarded in knowing that they stood for what was right,
right,
and the victory is clear.
What do you say to these groups like Southern Baptists that are saying we're going to fight this and we'll see that we don't recognize this as a valid decision and we're going to oppose it? What do you say?
I lived in the rural part of the South when the desegregation ruling came down, and the order to integrate the schools, we had the same sort of massive resistance to the law of the land. Actually, in Virginia, they closed public schools for a period of time. They would rather have their white children ignorant than have them be educated with black children. That was the mentality. And what happens? Well, look at history. You know, what has happened? That point of view became, it was sort of vicious and vigorous at the beginning, and it became more and more distorted. Nobody respects the Ku Klux Klan today. What happens is that people who have those deep prejudices die, and their children adjust very well. I remember going back to a little town I served, and a person who is now one of the town fathers invited my wife and me to come to lunch, and the whole purpose, and this was 25, 30 years after we, maybe 40 years after we'd been away from that town, the whole purpose of that lunch was for him to say to me, I know how my father treated you, and I know my father was wrong, and you were right, and I just wanted you to know that I know that. Well, that's what happens. And he's one of the leading citizens of that little town, and his children, it's not going to be a problem for them. And when you look at the attitudes on gay issues and race issues and female issues among people under 30 years of age, even the evangelical preachers' children disagree with the evangelical preachers. Time makes ancient good uncouth, said James Russell Lowell. And I think that's where we will go. Someone said, where there's death, there's hope. And the transition takes place when those who can adjust wind up ending their life on this earth. And the people that can adjust will adjust. It takes time, but it never moves backwards. So I would say we live into whatever the future will be. Who would have thought 50 years ago that we would elect an African-American president? Who would have thought that we would elect a woman? And we haven't elected a woman yet, but we've had one come so close that people can now imagine it.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Barney Frank came out of the closet as the first gay congressman, and when he finally retired, he was a quite well-respected congressman, and he was on TV this morning pontificating as usual, and a very delightful human being. I have met him, and I really appreciate the contribution. And today, black athletes are coming out. Business executives are coming out. Yeah. It's a different world, and we will live into that world, and it'll be a victory. I'm really confident about that, and I think what you do is love people, but don't engage them. You know, I'm not going to engage somebody who wants to argue about homosexuality. They can argue all they want. I'm not going to engage somebody who wants to argue about whether doctors should bleed patients to get rid of infections in their, because demons are in their bloodstream. Now, those things just disappear, and this will disappear, and we'll be in a much happier place. And a better world, a better world.
That's the Right Reverend John Shelby Spong, retired Episcopal Bishop of Newark, New Jersey. You'll hear much more of our far-ranging conversation on a future edition of State of Belief Radio. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. State of Belief Radio is made possible in part by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please visit us online at stateofbelief.com. And consider making a contribution today. We'll use it wisely. We'll keep State of Belief on the air, and we'll expand the reach of this program at a time when so very few voices representing an inclusive, respectful approach to interreligious dialogue seem to exist. Stateofbelief.com is also where you can find out more about the show, hear extended interviews, watch in-studio videos, read transcripts, and sign up for our podcasts. You'll also find more information about the topics discussed on this week's show. Stay in touch with us, please, through the week on Facebook and Twitter. Contact information is available at stateofbelief.com, including the toll-free listener line 800-856-0277. We encourage you to tell others about the show and encourage them to listen. We want them to be a part of the conversation. And please join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief. The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what?